I expected to go in the last round. There's no shame in it when the rest of the players are packing superpowers. John picks me, probably wanting to divide the humans up evenly, which leaves Ella to join Nine's team. We huddle up at our end of the gym.
I'm going to turn invisible right away, Six says. If you guys can keep the rest of them busy, I should be able to make it to their flag no problem.
John nods in agreement. I'm mostly worried about Eight. He's probably going to teleport to our side right away and make it go for the flag. Sam, I want you and Bernie Kosar on guard duty. I pat Bernie Kosar on the head. His beagle fur transforms under my fingers into the smooth coat of a tiger.
Yeah, we can handle it.
Five, you and I will go on offense. Keep them busy while Six makes a break for it. Five looks over his shoulder to where the other team is having their own huddle.
I want to take on Nine.
John and I exchange a quick look, both of us remembering yesterday's incident. It's not every day that someone volunteers to go head-to-head with the guard's battle-crazy lunatic. John shrugs.
Sure, I'll have your back. Take it easy on him this time, okay?
Five smiles, a cavalier look in his eyes.
No promises.
As our huddle breaks, I smile at Six.
Good luck out there.
They'll never see you coming.
So cheesy.
Ugh. Way to go, Sam.
Six returns my smile quickly. She picks up one of the Moog blasters and tosses it to me.
Thanks, Sam. I'm counting on you to keep me covered, okay?
I'll teleport over there, grab their flag, and make a break for it, Eight says, snapping his fingers. We won't even break a sweat. Nine shakes his head. That's exactly what they'll be expecting. So yeah, do that. But it's going to be a diversion. Sarah raises her hand, interrupting. Sorry, Nine. I just have to ask. Why did you pick me? Nine grins at her. You're my secret weapon, Heart. There's no way John's going to be effective with you making kissy faces at him. Kissy faces? Sarah repeats dryly, cocking the Moog blaster she picked up. Do you want me to shoot you? I've seen her shooting. She won't miss, I put in. I've watched Sarah shooting during training. I'm envious of her aim. I haven't been able to adapt to firearms nearly as quick as she has. They just make me nervous.
I know she won't, Nine replies, getting serious. That's why she's gonna be on Six patrol.
You know, she's going to go invisible, Eight says. How are we supposed to stop that?
That's where Ella comes in, Nine answers. Ella looks up from the blaster she's fiddling with, startled to hear her name. I think she was a little hurt at being picked last.
Me? She asks, incredulous.
Hell yeah, you, Nine replies. You're gonna use your telepathic mojo to pinpoint Six's location when she's invisible. Then, you and Sarah light her up.
I'm not sure if I can do that.
You located her in a big-ass base in New Mexico. This is just one room.
Nine shakes Ella's shoulders encouragingly. Just try, for me, all right? What am I going to be doing? I ask.
Nine's got that proud look on his face. I think I heard John refer to it as shit-eating that he gets when he thinks he's come up with something really juicy. He grabs my hand, and the little hairs on my arm stand up, an electric shock shooting through me. You, Marina, are my real secret weapon.
Are both sides ready?
Malcolm shouts from the lectern. The two teams stand about 10 yards away from each other, close to the halfway point of the lecture hall. I glance around. Everyone on my side looks determined. Sam has already started sweating a bit, constantly adjusting his grip on his blaster. Across from me, Sarah shoots me an innocent smile as she brandishes her own blaster. My heart actually flutters in response. but I try to keep a serious face.
Ready!
I shout to Malcolm.
Let's kick some ass!
Nine shouts. Malcolm hits a few buttons on the lectern. The room hums to life around us. Sections of the floor begin to rise, creating blocks of cover for people to hide behind. A pair of medicine balls on chains swing loose from the ceiling. Nozzles protrude from the walls, emitting bursts of smoke.
Begin!
Malcolm yells. For a moment, no one makes a move. Then, suddenly, my bracelet tingles to life. My red shield deploys just in time to block a burst of blaster fire. I look across the gym to see Sarah grinning at me, the muzzle of her blaster smoking.
Sorry, baby,
she yells before diving behind a piece of cover. On one side of me, I see Six disappear into the thin air. On the other side, Sam falls back towards our flag. Everyone is moving, and suddenly it's just like a real battle. Chaos. And there's Nine, coming right for me. He's so fast that I barely have time to fire up my lumen and toss a small fireball his way. He leaps over it and crashes down on top of me. I fall backwards, my shield between the two of us as he pins me to the ground. Nine pounds down on the shield with all his might. Dents form in the red material, but the shield holds. Frustrated, Nine leaps off me, and my shield immediately retracts into my bracelet. I get back to my feet as quickly as I can, but even blocked by my shield, Nine's tackle knocked the wind out of me. I'm slower than I should be.
You and your damn jewelry, Johnny,
Nine grunts.
I've been thinking about that thing ever since the last time we fought. It shocked me when I tried to yank it off by hand, so I wonder what would happen if...
I feel his telekinesis working. It's too late to do anything about it. He rips the bracelet right off my arm and flings it to the sideline.
Ha!
Nine yells gleefully.
What's up now?
Just as Nine's about to charge me, Five's rubbery arm slithers around his waist and flings him to the side. Nine springs right back to his feet. Five stands in front of him, his rubber bouncy ball and chrome ball bearing turning over in his palm. His skin transforms from rubber to solid steel.
Ready to take another shot? Five asks.
Oh, you have no idea,
Nine growls back.
It happens just like John said it would. Almost as soon as I've taken cover by our flag, Eight teleports into the vicinity. Remembering the rules that he can't teleport the flag back across the room, I wait for Eight to snatch our flag off the wall. As soon as he does, I spray him with blaster fire. Eight yelps in surprise as my first shot electrifies his back, knocking him off his feet. He rolls over. Damn, Sam! Shooting a guy in the back, not cool! I level my blaster at him. Drop the flag! I don't think so, he says, and scrambles to his feet. I squeeze off a couple more shots, but Eight nimbly dodges them, dancing behind a piece of cover. Even so, I've got him pinned down and he knows it. There's no way he's making it back across the room with our flag. Okay, Sam. Try this on for size, Eight shouts. He shoves the flag into his mouth and shapeshifts into the form of some freakish ten-armed lion creature. He lumbers over the barricade towards me, swatting my blaster out of my hands with one clawed paw. Get him, BK! I yell. Before Eight can make another move, Bernie Kosar crashes into him. BK has shapeshifted as well. He's taken the form of a giant boa constrictor. He wraps his body around Eight, pinning Eight's arms to his sides. As Eight gasps for breath, the flag goes drifting out of his mouth. I snatch it up and pin it back to our wall.
I watch as Sarah and Ella, both of them crouched down behind cover, close to our flag, point their blasters around the room. They're looking for a target they can't see. Come on, Ella, Sarah says hopefully. You can do it. Ella's face is pinched tight with concentration as she tries to locate Six telepathically. I hope this isn't too much exertion for her after yesterday's ordeal. Suddenly, Ella lights up.
There!
She shouts and starts shooting her blaster into thin air on the right. Sarah follows suit, not really aiming, just trying to cover the same area as Ella. Most of the blasts sail harmlessly into the wall. After a few shots, though, one of the electric currents seems to stop in midair. It sizzles for a moment, and I see the outline of Six's skeleton, almost like an X-ray, as it's knocked to the ground. Six's form reappears, looking surprised and confused that she's been caught out. She has to crab walk backwards to avoid another volley of shots from Sarah and Ella.
Nice job, guys!
I yell. Ella and Sarah take a moment to high-five before going back to aiming at Six. I slink along the wall, watching the action from the sideline. No one's paying any attention to me yet, and that's just the way our team wants it. In the center of the room, Nine ducks under one of Five's steel-plated punches, grabbing Five's arm as it sails over his head and twisting it, wrenching it behind Five's back. He starts prying at Five's fingers.
You might be made of metal, I hear Nine snarling, but you're still not stronger than me.
Nine forces Five's hand open. I can hear the metallic clang as Five's ball bearing hits the floor. Immediately, Five's skin returns to normal. Nine shoves him away, right into one of the swinging medicine balls. It hits Five in the face, flipping him over. He groans, holding his head.
Oops, says Nine. Looks like somebody lost his balls.
I'm distracted by the fighting, so I almost step right on the bracelet that Nine tore off John's wrist. Figuring that might come in handy, I pick it up and snap it on my own wrist. The icy feeling that spreads up my arm surprises me so much that I almost tear the thing off. I force myself to focus, sliding along the wall, staying out of view.
Hey!
Yells John. And it takes me a moment to realize he's talking to me.
You've got something that belongs to me.
Both of John's fists glow with fire. He sends two burning orbs the size of basketballs sailing right towards me.
I wouldn't have lobbed fireballs that intense at Marina if I wasn't sure the bracelet could handle them. The shield deploys in time to absorb them, but the force still knocks her against the wall, stunning her. I don't know what she's up to, sneaking around on the sidelines, but I'm sure it's part of some plan their team concocted. I glance over my shoulder to where Five is trying to scuttle backwards as Nine stalks him. Not good. I toss a fireball at Nine and he dives away. That gives Five a chance to regain his feet and create some distance between them. Of course, as soon as Five pops back to his feet, a bolt of blaster energy from Sarah puts him down again. Even though she's really screwing my team over, I can't help but be psyched at how well she's handling herself. Five's going to have to fend for himself for now. I need to figure out what Marina's up to and get my bracelet back. I race over to her just as she's pushed herself away from the wall. Her eyes widen when she sees me coming, and she lashes out with a kick to my legs. I deflect the blow and pin her up against the wall, trying to pry the bracelet off her. What's your plan, Marina?
I'll never talk,
she yells, getting into the spirit as she tries to headbutt me. Somebody's definitely been taking dirty fighting lessons from Nine.
John!
I hear Sam shout from the other side of the room.
Watch out!
I know it's coming as soon as Sam yells, but there's no way to dodge it. Eight teleports next to me, socking me in the jaw and knocking me away from Marina. As I turn to face him, he teleports behind me, kicking me in the back with both his feet. I stagger onto one knee. How am I supposed to defeat a teleporter in hand-to-hand combat?
I try to line up a shot on 8, but he's moving too fast. He keeps teleporting around John, hitting him with a quick punch and then disappearing before John can counterattack. Next to me, Bernie Kosar is still in the same boa form as when 8 teleported out of his clutches. BK, go help John. I'll hold down the fort. He transforms into a huge hawk and soars out to help John. That leaves me alone, guarding the flag. Our best chance for victory is still 6. She's pinned down behind cover, with Sarah and Ella blasting away to keep her there. I can see her clearly from my position. She's crouched, concentrating, a gentle breeze blowing through her dark hair. Wait, where's that breeze coming from? Suddenly, I feel the air pressure change in the room. 6 stands up from behind her barrier and thrusts her hands out towards Sarah and Ella. Ella is knocked backwards, somersaulting into the wall. Sarah falls back too, losing her grip on her blaster. Before they finish tumbling, 6 is sprinting forward. Sarah reaches out to reclaim her blaster, but 6 uses her telekinesis to send it skittering farther across the floor. 6 jumps up, grabs the flag from the wall, and starts booking back to our side.
Go, 6!
I shout, feeling a swell of pride. No one else in here would make this distinction, but I think of me, John, and 6 as the originals, competing against the newbies. And we're winning. As 6 races back towards our side of the lecture hall, I keep my blaster leveled, ready to lay down cover fire. 8 is too busy trying to outmaneuver both John and BK to notice 6 making a break for it. 9, however, sees it happening. He tosses aside a battered and exhausted-looking 5 and rushes to meet 6 in the middle of the floor. I'm willing 6 to turn invisible as 9 barrels towards her. She doesn't. In fact, it almost looks like she wants to take 9 on. 9 swings first with a big overhand right hook that 6 easily sidesteps. Quickly, she rabbit punches him twice in the side, then attempts to sweep his legs out from under him. 9 leaps over 6's leg and grabs her wrist when she tries to hit him with a palm strike to the nose. With his free hand, 9 fires off a punch, but 6 blocks the blow and hooks his arm. They grapple like that, each of them controlling one of the other's arms. 6 twists and struggles, but I can tell that 9's starting to overpower her. For a moment, I'm frozen, watching 6 and 9 fight. I guess it's just my natural instinct to stand back when the guard do battle, whether it's against Moogs or each other. But then I realize that I've got a clear shot at 9. His broad back presents a perfect target. I could end this game right now. With just one pull of the trigger, 9 will drop, and 6 will be home free to make it back to our side. I line up my shot and fire. I don't know how he does it. Maybe it's just my crappy luck. 9 spins 6 around just as I fire. My blast hits 6 in the back, and she crumples, spasming to the ground. The flag goes fluttering out of her grasp, and 9 snatches it up.
6!
I yell, startled.
I'm sorry!
I don't even see Marina coming.
Now is your chance, Marina. Go! With Sam distracted, I sprint past him and grab their flag off the wall. He notices me just as I start running back to my side, keeping close to the wall. He tries to take aim at me, but I rip the blaster out of his hands using my telekinesis. He won't be a problem now. 5 is laid out just a few yards away, looking groggy from tangling with 9. He won't be a problem either. It's John and Bernie Kosar I have to worry about. The two of them break away from 8 when they see me running with a flag. 8 quickly teleports into BK's path, tackles him, and teleports with him to the other side of the room. That just leaves John. 9 tries to intercept him, but even though she's barely shaken off the effects of the blaster shot, 6 manages to jut her leg out and trip 9 up. That gives John a clear path towards me. I'm still wearing his bracelet, so he must know that shooting his fireballs at me won't work. Instead, he makes a beeline to cut me off. It's disorienting at first. Using the anti-gravity legacy that Nine transferred to me at the start of the game, it's odd to feel the world shift sideways as I run up the side of the wall, my feet landing where it should be impossible. John's coming on so fast that he doesn't have time to adjust and crashes into the wall beneath me. I sprint across the ceiling to our home base wall and drop back down to the floor, holding the flag aloft. Part of me can't believe it. Even when Malcolm blows a whistle signaling an end to the game, I did it. We won.
Damn, I say, rubbing my head where it bounced off the wall. Didn't see that coming. I can't help but smile as I watch Marina celebrate. 8 teleports across the room to wrap her in a big hug, and Ella runs over to join in. 9 limps over to me, extending a hand.
Good game, boss, he says.
Yeah, you too, I say, clasping his hand. A couple weeks ago, the idea of losing to 9 would have made me nuts. Now, it doesn't seem to matter as much. The important thing is that both sides worked well together. The legacies on display, the fighting skills, everyone watching one another's backs. I know it's only a game, but it makes me believe we can take on anything. 9 steps away from me to go help 5 back to his feet. 5 looks pretty beat up. Bruises all down the side of his face. One of his arms hanging limp at his side. 9 makes a show of brushing him off.
No hard feelings, 9 says, smirking.
Yeah, sure, 5 replies sullenly. I watch as Sam kneels down next to 6. She's still shaking off the electric jolt of the blaster. I can tell Sam is feeling guilty. 6, he begins. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. 6 waves him off.
Forget it, Sam. It was an accident.
Not really, interrupts 9, strolling back over. Ella warned me it was coming telepathically. That's how I knew to turn you around.
We all turn to look at Ella. Her face is flushed from the excitement. She looks healthier than she did when we started, and more awake. And the others cross the room to congratulate Marina and get themselves healed. Malcolm strides over to me. He pats me on the back.
Well done, he says.
Not exactly. We lost. Malcolm shakes his head.
That's not what I meant. Well done bringing this all together. You know what I saw while watching all this, John?
I look at Malcolm, waiting for an answer.
A force to be reckoned with.
Chapter 27. After training, when I emerge from the shower, Sam is waiting for me in the hallway outside the bathroom. He's frowning, pretty much the same look he's had since after capture the flag, like he just single-handedly lost the war for us instead of making one mistake in a training game.
I really screwed up out there, he says. I can see why you're not bringing me to the Everglades.
Once everyone was healed, the group came together to unanimously vote on flying to the Everglades tomorrow. Sam staying behind has nothing to do with his performance in the lecture hall. It just makes sense to have him and Malcolm in Chicago, using the tablet to coordinate if we should get separated and monitor news feeds in case of trouble. It's an important task, but not something I was going to try talking any of the others into doing. No one wants to stay behind on our first mission, as a unified guard. You know that's not why, Sam.
Yeah, yeah, he replies half-heartedly.
Come on. It was just a game. Forget about it, I reply, punching him on the arm. He sighs.
That was a freaking embarrassment out there, dude.
in front of Six.
Oh, I reply, catching on. So you shot the girl you like in the back. Big deal.
It is a big deal, Sam insists. I look like a fool that can't protect himself. Or even worse, like someone that'll get the people he cares about hurt.
I don't know what to tell Sam. He's never had a girlfriend before. Trying to get with Six is like deciding to take up mountain climbing and choosing Everest as your first mountain. Look, I wish I had something useful to tell you, buddy. Honestly, though, Six confuses the hell out of me. If you really do like her, just be honest with her. She appreciates honesty, or, like, directness. Bluntness.
Bluntness makes me think of cavemen.
I pat Sam on the back. Be direct, but, you know, don't clubber or anything. You won't survive that. I'm joking, but Sam's frown only deepens.
What chance do I even have, John? She'll be hooking up with Nine in no time, probably. At least he can fight.
Nine? That makes me laugh. I pat Sam on the shoulder. Come on, man. And Six can't stand Nine.
Really?
Sam looks at me. His smile is more relaxed now, if still a little embarrassed.
Sorry to bug you with all this, he says. Guess I just need a confidence boost or something.
We're standing in front of my door now. I put my hands on Sam's shoulders, looking him in the eyes. Sam, just go for it. What have you got to lose? I leave Sam in the hallway to ponder his next move. I hope it works out for him. In a way, I think he and Six would work really well together. But I don't want to spend any more time trying to play matchmaker. I've got more important things to worry about. Not to mention a girlfriend of my own to think about. Sarah is waiting in my room, drying her hair with a towel. She gives me a knowing look after I've closed the door behind me, her face lit up by a playful smile.
That was some good advice, she says.
I glance over my shoulder towards the hallway, wondering how much of my conversation with Sam she overheard. You think so? She nods.
Sam, all grown up? Emily would be heartbroken.
It takes me a moment to remember Sarah's friend from Paradise, the one Sam had a crush on when we took that hayride together. It seems like such a long time ago. I hope I didn't just set Sam up to get his heart broken. You think he really has a shot with Six?
Maybe,
Sarah replies, walking over to me.
Beneath that tough exterior, she's still a girl. Sam's cute and funny, and he obviously cares about her. What's not to like?
She tosses her arms around my neck, and I pull her close. Maybe you should give him some advice on how to charm us, Lorik. You're pretty good at it.
Am I?
She replies, wiggling her eyebrows. She presses a lingering kiss to my lips, her fingers curling through my hair. In that moment, I totally forget about Sam and all the serious problems we're facing. It's amazing. I wish I could live in that kiss. Sarah slowly pulls away and looks up at me, smiling.
That's for shooting at you.
If that's what I get, you can shoot at me anytime.
So, what's next today?
Sarah asks, ticking my usual tasks off on her fingers.
More planning? Map drawing? World saving?
I shake my head. I was thinking we could get out of here. Sarah and I end up walking over to the Lincoln Park Zoo. I spent plenty of time on the roof of the John Hancock Center, so it's not like I've been totally cooped up since we returned to Chicago. Still, it's different to experience the city down here, with the people. Even with all the car fumes and trash smells you get in a big city, the air still seems fresher somehow.
Maybe it's just that I feel free. More alive down here than when I'm up on the roof with my troubles. With Sarah's hand in the crook of my elbow, it's possible to imagine we're just a normal couple on a date. That's not to say I'm not cautious. I'm wearing my bracelet underneath a light jacket, just in case it should pick up any signs of danger. We stop in front of the lion enclosure, but we can't see anything except the golden furred butt of a lion dozing off behind a chewed-up tire.
That's the bummer about zoos, Sarah says. The animals get so lazy and sleepy, sometimes you don't even get to see them.
That shouldn't be a problem for us, I tell her. I reach out with my telepathy, gently coaxing the lion to wake up. It climbs to its feet, shaking out its mane, and then saunters right towards us. He stares up at us from next to his watering hole, his black eyes blinking curiously. I ask it to roar, and it does. A big, hearty growl that makes some little kids nearby run away from the enclosure, shrieking and laughing. Good boy, I whisper. Sarah squeezes my arm.
You're a regular Dr. Doolittle, she says. If you ever need to go into hiding again, the circus would be perfect.
I use my animal telepathy at a few other cages. I encourage a bored-looking seal to put on an impromptu show with a beach ball. I ask the monkeys to come right up and press their hands against the glass so that Sarah can give them little high-fives. It's good practice for a legacy that I usually only use to communicate with BK. The zoo starts closing around sunset. As Sarah and I wander towards the exit, she puts her head on my shoulder and sighs. I can tell there's something on her mind.
I need more days like this with you, she says.
I know. I want that too. Once we've defeated the Moogs, I promise, we'll have all the time in the world. Sarah gets a distant look on her face, almost as if she's imagining that future, and it doesn't necessarily excite her.
What happens after, though? You go back to Lorien, right?
Hopefully. We still need to find a way back. And we need to hope Malcolm is right about these phoenix things contained in our chests, that we have enough of them, and that they're capable of restoring our planet.
And you want me to come with you?
Of course, I reply instantly. I don't want to go anywhere without you. Sarah smiles at me, with an edge of sadness that I didn't expect.
You're sweet, John, but I don't mean this like our road trip game with Six. I mean for real. Would we ever come back?
Sarah asks.
To Earth?
Yeah, of course, I say, because I know that's what I should say in this situation, even though I'm not sure it's actually true. I look down at my feet. I'm sure we'd come back.
Seriously? Years in a spaceship, John. Don't get me wrong. Part of me really wants to go. It's not every girl that has a boyfriend asking to take her to another galaxy. But I have a family here, John. I know they're not, like, on the level of restoring an entire planet to its former glory, but they're pretty important to me.
I'm frowning now, my good mood turning into something else. It's a sad feeling, a lost feeling. I don't want to take you away from your family, Sarah. Returning to Lorien, it's supposed to be a good thing. A triumphant thing. I hesitate, trying to find words to articulate what I'm feeling. I've always thought of it as what happens at the end, you know? After all the fighting, we'd return there and find a way to start over. It's like destiny, but it's also never actually felt truly possible, if that makes sense. I've never stopped to think out the details. I guess maybe I should. We stop walking and she reaches up to touch my face.
I don't want to take you away from your destiny. Please, don't think I'm trying to do that.
No, of course not.
But I don't want to go back to Lorien without you. I'm not sure I'd want to stay on Earth without you, she replies.
So where does that leave us?
I don't know what the future holds, Sarah says. But I love you, John. For now, that's all that matters. We'll figure the rest out when we get there.
I love you too, I reply, pulling her close and kissing her.
Just then, my bracelet begins to tingle.
Chapter 28.
What's wrong?
Sarah asks when I suddenly pull away from her. My bracelet's warning me. Something's up. I reply, spinning around, trying to take in everything around us at once. Something bad.
This seriously can't keep happening, Sarah says with disbelief, referring to last night's BK emergency.
No, this is different. Worse. Instinctively, I touch my bracelet as it sends icicles up and down my arm. We're on a pretty crowded street in downtown Chicago. I scan the faces around us. People, walking home from work, couples, heading out for dinner, humans, all of them. Not a pale face with a penchant for dark clothing to be seen. Yet, the bracelet has never steered me wrong in the past. There's danger nearby.
We should get back home, Sarah says. Warn the others.
I shake my head. No, if they're following us and we don't flush them out, we could end up leading them to the others.
Crap, you're right. So, what do we do?
We have to find them. I grab Sarah's hand and walk a few steps down the block. The pins and needles sensation on my wrist begins to fade, which means the danger is in the other direction. I turn back around and head that way, although I don't see anything out of the ordinary.
John?
Sarah says warningly, clutching my hand in both of hers. She's trying to hide the glow that my skin is suddenly giving off. My lumen is triggered, both my hands lighting up, ready for a fight. I take a deep breath and calm myself, willing my hands to go back to normal. Luckily, no one around us seems to notice. Over here, I say, and lead Sarah towards the mouth of a dark back alley. The bracelet is practically screaming at me now, my entire arm numb from the pins and needles. I slide up against the wall and poke my head around the corner of the alley. There are three of them. Mogadorian scouts by the look of them. They're not even making much effort to pass as human. Their pale heads clean-shaven, but without tattoos. Dressed in the dark trench coats that would spook just about anyone. Whatever they're doing here, it's pretty clear they aren't expecting to be spotted. Two of them are keeping watch while the third runs his hands underneath a dumpster. He yanks something free from beneath the metal. An envelope of some kind. There are three, I whisper to Sarah. She's standing next to me, her back against the wall. They must be the Vatgrones one Malcolm was talking about. Pale and ugly as usual.
What are they doing here?
Don't know, I reply, but they're easy targets.
I didn't bring a gun on our date, she whispers back. I should have known better.
It's okay, I tell her. They haven't spotted us.
Sarah looks down at my hands. We can't just let them do whatever they're doing, can we?
Hell no, I reply, realizing that my fists have clenched. For once, I've got the drop on Mogadorians. I want to know what they're up to. No more running scared. If things go bad, you run for help.
Things won't go bad, Sarah says firmly, and confidence flows through me. Light those assholes up.
I step into the alley and walk right towards the Moogs. Their hollow eyes focus on me in unison. For a moment, that old familiar chill runs through me, that fugitive feeling. I shove it down. This time, I'm choosing fight over flight. You guys lost? I ask casually, striding closer.
Get out of here, kid,
One of them hisses, flashing a row of tiny teeth. The Moog next to him opens up his coat, showing me the handle of a blaster tucked into his pants. They're trying to scare me off, like I'm just some human taking a really ill-advised shortcut home. They don't recognize me for what I am. That means whatever they're doing here, it isn't hunting me. Getting kind of chilly, I say, stopping about 10 yards away from them. You warm enough? Without waiting for a response, I trigger my lumen. A fireball swirls into existence over my palm, and I lob it at the closest Moog. He doesn't even have a chance to react before it envelops his face, lighting him up like a matchstick for a moment before he disintegrates to ash. The second Moog at least manages to reach for his blaster, but that's as far as he gets. I hit him with a fireball right in the chest. He lets loose a short scream and then joins the first Moog as dust on the dirty alley ground. I don't hit the final Moog with my lumen. He's the one holding that envelope. And I don't want to risk torching it. I want to see what the Moogs are after. What secret mission has these Mogadorians skulking around Chicago? He stares at me, almost as if he's waiting for me to dispatch him as easily as I did the others. The envelope clutched to his chest. When he realizes that I'm hesitating, he takes off sprinting down the alley. A Mogadorian running from me. Now there's a welcome change of pace. I grab the dumpster with my telekinesis and launch it at the Moog before he can get too far. The dumpster's metal sides screech as they grind against the alley wall. It hits the Moog and pins him up against the wall, his bones crunching. "Tell me what you're doing here, and I'll make this quick," I say, walking over to him. To demonstrate, I put a little telekinetic pressure on the dumpster, grinding it farther into his mangled body. A bubble of dark blood dribbles down the Moog's chin. His scream of frustration and pain makes me hesitate. I've never done anything like this before. The Moogs I've killed have all been quick and in self-defense. I hope I'm not going too far.
You're all going to die, spits the Moog.
I'm wasting my time. I'm not likely to learn anything important from some lowly scout. I shove the dumpster one last time with my telekinesis, finishing him off. Then I pull the dumpster away from the wall and pluck the envelope from the pile of Mogadorian ash. I turn it over in my hands. It's stuffed with papers.
What is it?
Sarah asks, approaching cautiously from the mouth of the alley. I light up one of my hands so I can see the papers in the darkness. I'm holding 3 pages covered in rigid script that looks like a cross between hieroglyphics and Chinese. Written in Mogadorian, of course. I guess it'd be too lucky to catch the Moogs sending secret orders in English. I hold up the papers so that Sarah can see. Know any good Mogadorian translators? I ask. Back at the penthouse, I gather everyone in the dining room to describe my encounter with the Moogs. 9 pats me on the back when I get to the part about killing the 3 Mogadorians.
"You should have brought that last one back here," he says. "We could have tortured something out of him, like they did to us."
I shake my head. I glance over at Sam, who's begun surreptitiously rubbing his scarred wrists. "That's not what we do," I say. "We're better than that."
"It's a war, Johnny,"
9 replies.
"What does this mean?" Marina asks. "Do they know where we are?"
"I doubt it," I say. "If they were here for us, they'd have sent more than 3. They didn't even recognize me when I approached."
"Yeah, and you're a famous Mogadorian killer," says 8.
"Weird."
"They'd have come by now if they were coming," 6 adds. "They aren't exactly known for their subtlety. We need to figure out what these papers say. It could be some kind of invasion plan."
"Just like my dream," whispers Ella.
The The papers in question are being passed around the table, everyone taking a look at the meaningless symbols on the pages. Malcolm takes the papers, frowning.
I spent time in captivity, but I never learned their language.
Pretty sure there's some translating software on Sander's computer,
offers Nine.
Doubt it has Mogadorian, though.
Malcolm runs a hand over his beard, still looking over the papers.
There are patterns here, like with all languages. This can be cracked. If you show me that software, I may be able to use it.
Everyone around the table looks nervous. It's the first whiff of the Mogadorians we've had since battling them in Arkansas. This doesn't change anything, I say. Whatever is in those documents, I'm sure it's something the Mogadorians don't want us to know. It's something we can use to our advantage. But until we know for sure, we press on with the plan we've already made. Get some rest, everyone. We leave for Florida in the morning.
Chapter 29. I stand over my father's shoulder as he scans the Mogadorian documents into Sander's computer system. Once the documents are scanned, my dad loads up some translating software, along with some kind of hacker program that's supposed to be able to crack through firewalls and crap like that. Do you think you'll be able to translate it? I ask. The first step was figuring out which program to use. And did you? I notice that my dad's opened and minimized a copy of iTunes. I tap the screen. Were you going to listen to some music? They didn't have iTunes when I was taken. I thought it might. My dad shrugs, self-deprecatingly. I'll admit to some trial and error, okay? So now what? I'm approaching it from every angle. All languages, even alien ones, share some commonalities. It's just a matter of isolating one and using it to decode the rest of the writing. He looks over his shoulder at me. This is pretty boring stuff, Sam. You don't need to keep me company. No, it's cool, I say. I want to. Really? He asks, looking me over. It looks to me like you had other plans. Observant, as always. I'm dressed in what passes as my best outfit, considering I've only got like 3 options. It's just a boring gray sweater, and my least grungy pair of jeans. I've been psyching myself up to do like John said, to try to have a conversation with Six about my feelings, carpe diem and all that. This latest crisis, even if it just involves paperwork, is a pretty good excuse to put that off. They can wait, I say, lamely, making a show of studying the computer screen as various language samples scroll by. My dad smiles gently, looking back to the screen himself. You know they're off to Florida tomorrow. After that, there will surely be another mission. And who knows what intel we might glean from these documents. A lot happening. What's your point? It might be a while before we have another quiet night like this one, he says. Don't put it off, Sam. I find Six on the penthouse roof, which is apparently the hot spot for guard who want to be alone. It's night, and the wind is stronger up here than normal, probably on account of Six messing with the weather. Both her hands are raised, and as she moves them back and forth, the sky responds. It reminds me of art class, the way paint would swirl together when we mixed watercolors. Six is doing that to the clouds. If there are any weathermen watching the skies tonight, they're probably pretty freaked out. I don't say anything at first, not wanting to interrupt. I stand next to Six and watch her, the wind whipping her black hair across her face, bathed in the blinking red lights that line the roof. There's a small smile creeping up on the corners of her mouth. If I didn't know her better, I'd say Six was actually feeling content. Slowly, almost like she regrets stopping, Six lowers her hands and looks at me. The wind dies down immediately, the clouds resuming their normal, lazy course across the night sky. I feel like I'm interrupting something. Hey, you didn't have to stop. It's cool. What's up?
she says. Did your dad figure out those documents already? No. Nothing's up. I just wanted to talk to you. Oh, Six replies, looking back up at the sky. Sure. It's no big deal, I say, hurriedly, feeling stupid. You can go back to practicing or whatever. I'll leave you alone. No, stay, she says, suddenly. Being cooped up in that penthouse all the time is hard for me. Ever since I developed this legacy, I felt connected to the weather. I like to keep in touch with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally, I reply, as if I understand the first thing about being connected to the weather. You did really great in training today. I'm sorry I screwed up.
Come on, Sam, she says, rolling her eyes. Enough apologizing already. Is that really what you came up here to talk about?
No, I reply, sighing. Screw it. I decide to just take John's advice and go for it. I was wondering if you'd like to, I don't know, hang out sometime. So, maybe not my smoothest attempt at asking someone out. Six playfully arches an eyebrow.
Hang out? We practically live on top of each other in there. We hang out all the time.
I mean, like, hang out. By ourselves.
Aren't we doing that right now?
Yeah, I mean, I stammer, then notice the wicked smile on Six's face. Are you messing with me?
A little, she says, crossing her arms. So you're asking me on a date, is that it?
Yeah, and I'm doing an amazing job at it.
You're not doing so bad, she says, gently, moving a little closer to me. But we're fighting a war here, Sam. There's not a ton of time for hanging out. You know that.
John and Sarah went to the zoo today.
But I don't want to have a John and Sarah thing with you, Six says, like it's the most obvious thing in the world.
Oh. I shrink back, feeling gut punched.
I just thought, when you went to Spain, John told me how you felt about me. And back in Arkansas, the way we hugged. Ugh, crap, I'm an idiot. I should have known you wouldn't be interested in someone like me.
Oh, there, Six says, grabbing my hand before I can make a break for the door.
I'm sorry, Sam. I didn't mean it like that. I do like you.
You just don't like me that way, I say, filling in the rest of the classic line.
I didn't say that. I do. Well, I might.
Six throws her hands up.
I don't know. Look, it's just John and Sarah. They think it makes things easier for them, but it doesn't. It just causes trouble.
They seem happy to me, I reply.
Sure, right now, Six says. But what about when something happens? You know, John's a good leader and all, but he's not a realist. Do you think we're going to fight an entire army of Mogadorians without some casualties?
Jeez, that's dark.
It's the truth. Everything's gonna go to shit eventually, Sam.
She reaches out and plucks a loose thread off the front of my sweater.
I wish you'd stay away from us. Go somewhere safe. When it's over, maybe things could be different.
I let loose with an incredulous laugh.
Huh, seriously? That's like the kind of crap that Spider-Man tells Mary Jane when he's trying to break it off with her. Do you know how embarrassing it is to be talked to like I'm some superhero's girlfriend?
Six laughs, too, shaking her head. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it that way. I'm just realizing what a hypocrite I'm being. This is exactly the opposite of the advice I gave to John about Sarah. Maybe you're right, and things are going to get bad, I say. But that doesn't mean you should cut yourself off. Being all about the war all the time? That can't be good. Maybe you should spend, like, 95% of your time as Six and, 5% with me, being Marin. I didn't plan that little speech. Six's old human name just pops out. Her mouth opens a bit, but she doesn't say anything at first, the name catching her off guard.
Marin, she whispers. I'm not sure I even remember how to be her.
There's something in the way she's looking at me now. Almost like she's throwing caution to the wind. It's not the sort of devil-may-care look I'd expect from Six, but it's something more vulnerable, like she's decided to drop her guard just a little. I don't let go of her hand. "Promise me you won't die," she says, bluntly. In that moment, I'd promise her just about anything.
"I promise."
Her grip on my hand tightens, her fingers intertwined with mine. She steps closer. The wind picks up again, and I reach up to brush some hair out of her face, holding my hand there against her cheek. And that's when 8 teleports onto the roof. 6 jumps away from me like she's been scalded. I could pretty much strangle 8 right then and not feel any remorse. I expect 8 to crack some joke, but his face is set and serious. "Guys, we need you downstairs."
"What is it?"
6 asks, starting towards 8.
"Moogs?"
8 shakes his head. "It's Ella." I guess my dad was wrong about this being one of those quiet nights. 8 takes our hands, and I immediately get the disorienting feeling of having the world yanked out from under me. I blink my eyes, and we're suddenly standing in the room that Marina shares with Ella. Ella is on her back in bed, all the blankets kicked off, rigid as a board. Her eyes are squeezed shut. Perhaps the most frightening thing is the small trickle of blood dribbling down from the corner of her mouth. She's bitten down on her lip, hard enough to draw blood. Marina kneels next to the bed, dabbing at Ella's mouth with a tissue. She keeps whispering Ella's name over and over, trying to wake her up. Ella doesn't move, except to clench and unclench her fists in the sheets.
"How long has she been like this?"
my dad asks.
"I don't know," says Marina, sounding panicked. "She went to bed before me, said she was tired from training. I found her like this, and she won't wake up."
I look around, not really sure what I should be doing. Pretty much everyone seems to be sharing that feeling. Everyone is crowded into the room, or is standing in the doorway. Everyone sharing a look of uncertainty. "This has never happened before?" I ask Marina.
"You were here for the worst one when she was screaming," she answers. "She's always woken up before."
"I don't like this," grumbles 9 from the doorway. Bernie Kosar seems to agree. He stands at the foot of the bed, sniffing the air like a guard dog catching a bad scent.
"She's sweating so much," says Marina.
"Some kind of fever?"
John asks. "It was never like this during my visions," 8 says.
"You guys?"
John and 9 both shake their heads. Marina grabs a towel from a nightstand drawer and begins to dab at Ella's forehead. Her hands are shaking so badly that Sarah eases the towel away from her.
"Here," she says. "Let me do it."
8 puts his arm around Marina as she steps back from the bed, rubbing her back. Marina leans against him, gratefully.
"Should we try healing her?" 6 asks. "Or using one of the healing stones?"
"There's nothing to heal," John replies. "Not that we can see, anyway. And using the stone, who knows what might happen? What with it doubling the pain and all."
"Did you try just prying her eyes open?"
suggests 5. Everyone gives him a strange look, like it's a callous suggestion. But it actually doesn't seem much worse than letting Ella suffer through whatever nightmare she's having.
"What? You guys have better ideas?"
Gently, my father peels back one of Ella's eyelids. Her eye is completely rolled back in her head. We can only see the whites. I remember the time I got knocked off the rope in gym class by Mark James and had to get a concussion test. They shined a flashlight in my eyes.
"John, maybe you could use your lumen," I suggest.
"It's bright. It might wake her up." John reaches over, lighting up his hand like a flashlight and shining it into Ella's eye. For a moment, her body stops its constant twitching, and she seems to relax.
"Something's happening,"
I breathe.
"Ella, wake up,"
urges Marina.
Ella's hand snaps upwards, grabbing John's wrist with a force that startles him.
It reminds me of one of those scary movies where the little girl is possessed by a demon. Her hand glows red